We move on to the second half of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Mark Howard here with you. Darren and Chase on vacation today and tomorrow. They'll be back with us on Monday, taking a little long weekend. Right now, the Titans are continuing their OTA work. A little later this hour, we expect to have some media availability. We'll see if Julio Jones is part of that. If he is, we'll certainly have some coverage for you. He has not spoken since being acquired by the Titans. And if nothing else, we'll hear from Mike Vrabel. So a lot of good things going on. And with that in mind, we call upon an outstanding analyst for ESPN, Jeff Saturday, longtime center for the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff, it's a pleasure to talk to you once again. Thanks a lot for giving us a few minutes of your time.
Yeah, glad to be here, man. It's a pretty easy week right now, right, for all the
change.
We're just kind of laying it out. This is as good as it gets right now in June.
No question. And Mark, of course, is a veteran of sports talk in this city. June, in the middle of June, is not always the most exciting month of sports talk. But with this acquisition of Julio Jones, it certainly has given us some things to chew on. So, Jeff, let's just start with you along those lines. When did you start to think, you know, this could happen? It might be the Titans. And, wow, if it is the Titans, what does this mean?
Yeah, you know, it was a couple of weeks ago, honestly. I mean, I had always been under, my two favorite places, San Francisco was one, Tennessee was the other, that I thought would be actual fits that could happen. And so with Tennessee, as it kind of moved on and you saw the play, I think it actually is a great deal for both. And I think Tennessee gets a player who is motivated, is still very capable of not only commanding certain types of coverages, but being able to beat it. And for what they're trying to do offensively, I think it fits perfectly, especially losing Arthur Smith to the Falcons to go, you know, call plays. It's going to be a little bit different, but man, you get two big body receivers like they got and that big body back there running it. And don't forget how athletic Tannehill is. I mean, like you've got a formidable, opponent back there in the skill position. So, you know, they look a lot like offensive linemen, which always lets me smile. You know what I mean? I like all those guys. They're closer to me than they are to the typical receiver, so I appreciate that.
Well, Jeff, this is one thing that I'd love to get your outside perspective on this, because everybody's got their opinion here. They know, they talk about this team so often. But in your mind, what is the difference in upgrade between Corey Davis and Julio Jones in terms of where they are at this stage of their career? Obviously, I mean, the track record for Julio speaks for itself, but Corey Davis did have a nice year last year. They elected to let him go. The price for each isn't that different. Of course, one guy's at a different stage of his career. So what's the net gain in your mind?
I mean, honestly, I think it's pretty substantial. Listen, the one thing about Julio, when he is healthy and has been on the field, his productivity, you're not going to match up one-on. Like you're going to have to bracket. You have to do something yards after the catch with his hands. I'm not trying to slight, Corey Davis, but that's not, to me, it's a substantial upgrade from what Julio Jones brings to the organization. And if you get 3 years out of Julio, this is a home run for Tennessee. I will put it this way. Even if Corey Davis had stayed in with the Titans, I would have favored the Colts in this division for next season because of the Colts' defense and how good they are. And if Wentz plays even decent, I would have. With this, I put them dead even. I mean, I moved it up that much where I felt like, you know, I feel like the kind of the Browns and the Chiefs, obviously, and the Bills kind of have the AFC cornered a little bit, you know, from a roster perspective. But when you get down Colts, Titans, like these teams that could surprise you, the Ravens, like these teams that are right on the cusp of being able to push those teams, I like where they are. And I think this is a huge upgrade, not only from the receiver perspective, but the way that defenses have to play you will allow for sustainability on the offense, which will help the Titan defense, and we know that's an area that needs to be improved. And so I think it complements the team extremely well.
We're speaking to ESPN NFL analyst Jeff Saturday. Jeff, what about Ryan Tannehill and just how the narrative has changed about him, especially his ability to throw downfield?
Oh, it's been a huge change. I mean, I liken it to Josh Allen. It wasn't a 1 year type thing that happened with Josh Allen that, you know, we all kind of, well, at least I know, I'm not going to pretend I was that smart. I was shocked at how well and the jump that he made, you know, that fast. But if you've watched him, you know, kind of progress with the Titans and what he's been able to do, it's been remarkable. I mean, you know, the calmness within the pocket and within the offense, his command of it, I've been extremely impressed by. I think his athleticism goes undervalued and truly under-discussed in the red zone. He is someone that, I mean, think about it right now when you get in the red zone with Brown, Julio, Henry, and now with Tannehill as well. I mean, you literally are going to have to just match up, man, because all of those guys can hurt you. And so I think it's been a huge pickup for the Titans, and he's earned his contract, every bit of it, and continues to impress us by the way that he played.
You played against Mike Vrabel. He came into this job relatively inexperienced, not only as a head coach, but as a coach, period. What has impressed you in his development in this job?
Oh, his conviction to what he believes is going to win. I think that, to me, has been a breath of fresh air. He has not tried to be anything he is not from a coaching perspective. You know, he's not afraid to make a move and try something. Situationally, I've been impressed by him, but conviction, you know, he likes to play ground and pound. He likes to be physical and play nasty. I appreciate that's him. I mean, I know him personally as well. We did the CBA stuff together, so we get to spend time together. And so, I think the team is a reflection of his personality, which I like. And here's the other part. I think, from a relational standpoint, I think he is fantastic with his team. Like, you see guys and the way they talk, and I appreciate that. He doesn't have this, you know, standoffish, you know, my players are my play. I mean, I think he does a really good job of people understanding that he's the head coach, right? He's got a job to do, and he's going to do his job. But I appreciate the relationships he has with his players, and it seems that he kind of can do both, be a hard-nosed, tough coach, but also be, quote, a player's coach simultaneously, which I'm all for. And I think players that have played to the level that he has, he's totally confident in himself, man, and it shows.
We're talking to Jeff Saturday. And, Jeff, you're no stranger to being on offenses that had a lot of weapons, right, a lot of different people that could hurt you. What is important, because this is getting talked about a lot here, as you can imagine. Julio Jones is used to getting, on average, about 10 targets a week. That may not be the case every week here. You got a lot of other guys that you might spread the ball around on a particular week to, especially when you have maybe the best back, the most powerful back in football. What's important on a team? How did you guys handle it in Indy in terms of keeping everybody on the same page, having the right attitude, knowing that individually everybody wants the ball?
Right. Selfless, you know, and that's the conversations we had at the beginning of every season. You know, every week is, you don't know who's going to be the guy who's going to get the touches. You don't know how defenses are going to play you and what they're going to try to take away. But you have to be selfless when it's not your turn. You still got to run. You know, if you're running a clear out route, you got to run at 100 miles an hour, right? Like, because you ain't getting it, that you can't jog it off, or vice versa. When it is your turn, appreciate what the other guys are doing. And I think that was what made us so effective, is you don't know what deep, I mean, you don't know if defenses are going to try to double Julio or Brown or bring eight or nine in the box to stop Henry and make you beat him with the arm. And every week it's something different. And honestly, every half of football can potentially be different. But whatever we have to do to win, that's the most important thing. And that we all know that when one of us wins, we all win. And so if it's a guy who gets 10 targets or 10 touches and makes the most of them, that's what we're going to do. And if next week it's different, that's what we're going to do. But you have to be at that point where everybody understands that this thing is going to get moved around and be okay with it. And again, you and I both know everybody wants the ball. You know, guys don't sit on the bus happy with a 3-catch, 30-yard game. But if that's what it required for us to win, sometimes you take those and move on. But I can tell you, I've been on a lot of those offenses where everybody got plenty of touches, plenty of receptions, plenty of yards, plenty of touchdowns. So if you do it right, everybody can be really happy.
Tell me this, too. This is another dynamic that we're talking about where maybe you're that guy who's the third or fourth wide receiver or that back out of the backfield who is under the radar, but you're going to maybe get improved matchups because of these, you know, these stars that you have on the field that take all the coverage, like Julio Jones does. Who was the best back in your day who maybe carved out a role for himself, maybe a career for himself, being that secondary guy, but playing the role well?
Oh yeah, Dominic Rhodes. I mean, he was a running back for us, and whether it was with Edrin or with Joseph Addai, you know, like Dommy, you know, he was a heck of a running back, man, and understood when it was his time. You know, he was going to make the runs, but he was also really, really strong coming out of the backfield. And to your point, understood matchups, like what he did well and how he could match up. And we had a number of guys who came through. I could think of receivers. I mean, you think of guys like Brandon Stokely who go way under the radar from a receiver perspective because we had Dallas Clark and Reggie and Marv. But, I mean, there were seasons I think Stokely got 100 catches or somewhere close because of exactly what you're saying. Matchups matter. And being able to find your fit and maximize your value. So, fans and casual observers of the game don't always see those guys. But I'm telling you, from an offensive line perspective and from a team perspective, there's a reason you got 53 on your team. And it matters. And those guys having seasons efficient and productive take you from a 9-10 win team to 12-13 wins where you're setting the world on fire. And those are big, big players for your team.
Jeff, last year Derrick Henry had 378 carries. If you're Todd Downing, the offensive coordinator, how important is it to winnow that number down to about 300?
Oh, man, listen, that's such a tricky, like, I understand longevity and I understand why people, but there are times when the game just dictates what you're going to do. And I think adding Julio will obviously allow for different matchups and different situations. You know, we were always one of those that you wanted to keep the freshest guy on. The problem with Henry is he's a battering ram. And so as the game progresses, he gets better because he's been so physical in quarter one and quarter two. So, you know, I think it's a lot easier, you know, in the church they say, you know, it's easy to preach, hard to live. As an offensive coordinator, that's easy to say, hard to do when you're looking back at that dude and he's doing what he's doing. I can tell you he ain't going to be the first guy I'm taking off the field. I don't blame him.
It's a subject you guys pretty much talk about every day on NFL Live. What does your gut tell you about the way this Aaron Rodgers situation with the Packers is going to play out?
I think, you know, when the season starts, he'll be back. I mean, he's a 37-year-old quarterback who just won the MVP. It would be hard for me to see him not playing football. And if you're the Packers, there's no possible way you trade him. And so at the end of the day, I think that the relationship will probably be, hopefully it's better, but even if it's not, you saw what he did when his feelings were hurt. He goes out and wins the MVP. I think he's professional enough to know that he gives the Packers the best chance to win a Super Bowl, and that includes the teammates that he, you know, works with and is close friends with. And so I don't think anything happens soon. I think both are just going to dig in a little deeper. But when you get down to the season time, I think he ends up playing.
Jeff, great stuff. We're all hoping for that because you don't want to see one of the greatest of all time sitting out. Because like you said, it's tough to trade that guy. There's no way you could put a price tag on what he's worth. Thanks a lot for joining us for a few minutes today, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Always enjoy. You guys have a great one. Thanks so much.
Jeff Saturday, longtime center, Indianapolis Colts. Always like comparing his days with those great Colts teams that we saw come through here every year to now what the Titans are dealing with. And Mark, I'm looking at my timeline on Twitter. I don't know. I guess 12:15 was the minute, but the media was given the green light to show some clips from Julio Jones on the field, and they're coming through like wildfire now. So, yes, I see number two in a Titans jersey.
There you go.
So we'll talk more about that on the other side, and we'll be on standby. We'll hear some media things. I'm assuming this video is from a little bit earlier in the day, but I'm not 100% sure. They changed, but they had initially this morning sent out some word that they had moved the practice to 11 a.m., but we're just now seeing some clips of Julio Jones running routes, et cetera. Pretty exciting stuff. Stay tuned. We've got more coming here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, make sure you listen to The Game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's The Game's 1K Payday, presented by Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay. Listen for keywords at 9, noon, and 3. In fact, I just heard they gave the keyword out at noon, so make sure you're listening every day for that. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter that keyword for a shot at 1,000 smackers, 1,000 bones. Not a bad deal there. So just listen, and you can win. We're listening to hear when Mike Vrabel or other Titans take the podium here. They are looks like they're gathering for the post-game media conference. And it is fun to see those clips. Julio Jones wearing the Titans uniform. He went through the workout today. So, Mark, we touched on this at the beginning of the show, but I think it bears repeating. We know the Titans have not maximized at times. You know, they went through a tough period, right? The last days of Bud Adams when he was really getting up there in age, and then the adjustment in leadership for a couple years after that. They sort of lost touch for a while. They didn't have a great, well-oiled machine. In recent years, you know, much more stability. They've hired some new executives. I really am hoping that they can maximize this opportunity here. And I said this yesterday on the show, and I think this is a great opportunity. You said it right, so I know you agree with me, selling tickets, but also making sure you fill the seats with your fans, right? We know it's tougher and tougher these days to keep all of the seats filled with your fans because how many fans like to travel, especially to Nashville for a weekend, but where can they make some inroads there?
I think doing stuff like this, I think they've sent a clear signal to their fans that they're all in. And I agree with you, Willie. I think you have to do that now. I didn't necessarily think so before. And I don't think you make a move just for the sake of making a move. But I think moving aggressively when you have that window of opportunity, I think is important. Yeah, the days of Floyd Reese were a lot different because a lot of it involved, salary cap management. And then, of course, you had, you know, Silent Mike Reinfeld, who's a very nice man, but you know, that was a forgettable regime.
Rustin, not the most charismatic person.
No, he was not. He didn't. He did not have charisma. But Rustin Webster. It was a reign of error, and then John Robinson comes in, and it hasn't been perfect. I mean, we know he's had a few double bogeys. But he's always been aggressive, and I like that. He's undeterred. If he makes a mistake, he shakes it off, and that doesn't change the method of building this team. And I think that Amy Adams Strunk, wants the fans to know that they're in it to win it. Risky. You got to risk it for the biscuit, and all those cliches. But I like what they're doing. And this is the time to go after Julio Jones. And I think he'll be, he's excited to come here. It's not like bringing somebody in where they're like, I'm kind of slumming it here. But I think, they can get a lot of production out of him. And I think we're all excited to see Ryan Tannehill throwing the deep ball to Julio Jones. So, absolutely, Willie. And this is a guy who is a bona fide Hall of Fame receiver. It's not a whole lot of doubt here. So he's still got some left, we believe. And I agree with Jeff. If they get 2 good years out of him, this is a great deal.
I'm reading by some various media members that Julio Jones will address on the Zoom the Nashville media. So we will carry that live. So if you're listening here, we'll have it covered. Whenever that starts, we will pass it over and listen in on the very exciting Zoom. As you know,
well,
Mark, in these days with people's internets and things like that, it's not always the smoothest transitions when we carry it live, but it is entertaining at times.
Well, he's a lot chattier than the previous former Atlanta Falcon, Vic Beasley, who they got last year.
Pretty low bar.
I don't think anybody in the media ever spoke to him.
So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and take a break here so we have some extended time and some flexibility when he does take the podium. I believe Jeffrey Simmons is going to be first up here. So we'll pass on that, even though Jeffrey is a lot of fun in his own right. But we'll go to the headliner today when he does go up there. So we want to make sure we have the time to do that in its entirety. So keep it right here. We'll have Julio Jones when he addresses the media for the first time as a member of the Titans coming up just around the corner. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick, Mark Howard here with you as we await Julio Jones to take the podium and speak to the Nashville media and fans for the first time publicly since he has become a Titan. Went through the workout today. I guess maybe a little light rain might have fallen here and there. It's held off for the most part, it looks like, at this part of town, and looks like everything went well. So, Mark, as we await and we're in the stall until he takes the podium, just a couple of more things that we continue to hit on. You know, some of the things that Jeff Saturday said. You know, I think he acknowledged what I think a lot of us say. You can say all the right things as a receiver, right? But deep down, sometimes you know when you're sitting there looking at the stat sheet and you know you only got 3 catches or 3 balls thrown to you, that, you know, you have to overcome that, right? As a sports competitor. Right, and that is going to happen to some of these guys on a team that should have a lot of different ways to beat you.
Yeah, Willie, I really believe that is going to be a major thought point going into just about every game. And it's like Jeff said, you're occasionally going to have those games where Julio's numbers might be down, but if the Titans win, for the most part, I don't think he's going to be that upset. Now, if it goes week to week where he just uses a decoy, you know, somebody's not doing their job. So I don't imagine, you know, he might not reach 10 touches a game every week, but I would imagine they'd be remiss if they didn't try to get the ball to him.
Oh, yeah. I think this should be, it should work itself out. It might be a process, and I think if people are patient with it, it is going to really work to their advantage. Jeffrey Simmons is right at the podium. In the meantime, let's drop in one other interesting thing that has just come down here. They're at the morning skate in Las Vegas on the hockey front. We will talk to Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock for the latest on this. And, of course, he's the very best, right? So this is always something you want to listen to. But you got two great teams. You have Vegas leading Colorado 3-2. Colorado's head coach Jared Bednar is not in Vegas, at least at this moment, because of an irregularity in his COVID-19 test.
Oh,
I don't know much,
man,
of the details on that, and sometimes you get it squared away, you hop a plane, and you can get there by the time the game starts, which is not until later tonight. But what a strange turn of events. You're in Vegas, and you don't have your coach.
Well, and this series has absolutely flipped
yes,
in favor of Vegas. You know, they lose the first game 7-1, and a lot of people have mused that might have been the worst thing that Colorado could have done. Not that they could have avoided it, but they beat Vegas 7-1, barely beat them in overtime in game 2, and then Vegas came back to win the next 3, including coming back from a 2-0 deficit to win game 5 in Colorado 3-2, which when the Avs are playing golf this summer and not playing in the Stanley Cup final, they're going to think about that game for a long time.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about it. And they had a great chance right before they gave up the overtime game winner. So much happened in just the first 50 seconds of the overtime. It was all over right after that. One chance for the Avs, and then a block shot goes the other way, and then boom, it's over. So imagine having to play an elimination game without your coach. That is possibly going to be the case here. I can't think of, off the top of my head, another big game. We know COVID brings up these situations, right? We know Nick Saban had to sit out a game this past football season, but a game of this magnitude, off the top of my head, nothing comes to mind.
No, Willie, and you also know, and really can't probably say, but like many Predators fans, I despise the Vegas Golden Knights, the most overly entitled team in the NHL. Yeah, it's the old line that the late great governor of Texas, Ann Hutchinson, said about George Bush, and that is, he was born on third base and he thought he hit a triple. Vegas gets handed this great team right out of the chute, and their long-suffering fans might finally get a Stanley Cup.
Well, and to their credit, they were smart on how they did it.
Oh,
it does bring to mind that we're going through this again, right, with Seattle, and they get, they see the blueprint. And we're going to go through this again. Like, how good is Seattle going to be?
I guarantee you that Florida will not give up Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault for a hill of beans.
Yes, which did happen.
God.
And that was part of the perfect storm that had an expansion team go to the Stanley Cup final their first year and has been a contender each year since they've been in the league, and they're one game away from going to a conference final again.
Yeah, and it's funny. Yeah, we can joke about this. The Preds got the two Ottawa Senators that turned out to be that. Well, one, Duchesne, the jury's out, but Turris and Duchesne, and Stone goes to Vegas, and they're going to build. They're going to build a statue of him in front of that arena in about 10 years. He's been unbelievable as a captain and a player. And a lot of Preds fans ask me, what does Vegas have that we don't? And I said, Jonathan Marchessault. A guy that is not a great skater, but, is always there, is always in the right place.
Yeah, he makes big plays. I'm seeing some tweets to the effect of there is a chance that if things go right, if he gets cleared, that by the time the game starts tonight, they could get Bednar physically. Of course, it's not too far from Denver to Vegas. Presuming he's still in Denver, he had to be held back. Who knows? He could be in the air by now. But hopefully, he'll be there. You'd hate to be in that spot if you're the Avs, be without your head coach for an elimination game that you have to win to get back home for a Game 7.
Just tell him not to fly Pioneer Airlines. He might not make it there in time.
All right. Let's take a quick break again. Do we have the ability to do that? We do not. Okay, so we're still in the hold mode. I did see some interesting things from Jeffrey Simmons. Apparently, he is trying to lose weight, and he is trying to, I guess, streamline. He has worked the carbs out of the diet. He is not going vegetarian or vegan. But, he's born and raised in Mississippi. He loves talking about loving to eat pies. We've talked to him about, the good Southern cooking. Apparently, there's been an adjustment there in the diet.
Yeah, there's always a defensive lineman every year who's either put on weight or taken off weight.
Yeah, the vegan question, it was a hard no. It wasn't just I don't think I'll go vegan. It was a pretty adamant, no, it's not for me.
I remember when the former Sound Prince Fielder decided to go vegetarian, right? Remember Prince Fielder?
Yeah.
And that was kind of an upset right there. But he did do it for a while, right? I don't think he stuck with it forever, but he did it a decent amount of time. I don't think it affected his swing a whole lot.
How much weight did he lose?
That's a good question. I think he did drop some. I don't remember seeing him looking completely different on the diamond. But for a defensive lineman, if you're Jeffrey Simmons, you're already a heck of a player. But I guess trying to just reach a new level.
By the way, it was Senderek Marks who came in one year saying, I went on a diet, lost 40 pounds. Next year, put on some beef, you know, put on some muscle, and wasn't really a good player until he went to Jacksonville.
Well, that is true. What great names from the past. But Jeffrey Simmons, of course, is a guy that you would hope will benefit from the additions that they made in the offseason. Yeah. He's a guy that already is an immense talent, but you're hoping for that defense to get to a new level, right? And he's going to be a big part of it.
Well, I think Autry, you know, is really going to help Jeffrey. And this has got to be the year where he explodes on the scene. You know, we've sort of been teased a little bit because, you know, he's shown us a lot, you know, through his stay here. But you know, the Titans drafted him because many felt like, you know, he was going to be, you know, an all-pro caliber player. And we haven't seen that guy every week, although, you know, eating up blocks sometimes is a very, you know, unglamorous thing. And sometimes he's been called upon to do it. But you get that push from inside, you can really help the pass rush.
All right, Mike Vrabel is now at the podium. Let's check in and listen to what he has to say after Julio Jones' first day as a Titan.
Getting a look at him in person.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole idea is to have your players practice and the ones that are new to our system, try to get them in here and get them acclimated to how we do things. You know, every place is different. And, you know, but it is exciting to have them in here and, you know, go through our meetings, start to learn teammates and figure out who those people are and how they interact and as well as, you know, some of our offense and the installation.
Jim Wyatt.
And what's first for him, Mike? I mean, I guess getting acclimated. Notice you spent a lot of time with Todd, maybe with the quarterbacks. How important is it to maybe get him up to speed now where it's better at training camp?
Well, I think that's, you know, something that's important. As soon as you can learn what to do and how to do it, you can transfer that out to the field. And, you know, he's you know, run a lot of routes, caught a lot of passes, and been a very productive player. But I think that these things take time in new situations. So you know, that's what we're focused on now, and that's why he was, you know, back here today. And we'll see him, you know, next week when we finish up the off season program.
Joe Rexroad.
Mike, how do you think Julio Jones fits into this offense? But what do you think he does for other guys on this offense?
You know, right now, Joe, we're trying to really, you know, get him acclimated, and you know, certainly he's a productive player. He's a big target, strong hand, sure-handed. You know, just really have enjoyed his attitude and the interactions that I've had with him about our football team and about how you know, just his willingness to come in here and try to learn how we do things. So, you know, his impact, you know, obviously can help a lot of people. I think, you know, there's ways to do things, and then veteran players that have been successful in this league, you know, can also try to explain things to younger players. You know, sometimes those are your best coaches, and I'm sure he'll provide some of that. But you know, ultimately, we're just trying to figure out where he fits in and how he best gets acclimated to our system.
Luke.
Mike, you talk a lot about wanting to have versatility, and now you've got at least three receivers in Julio, Josh, and AJ who can play sort of all three positions and move inside and outside. What does it do for a passing game when you have those options to move guys around and no one is the, you know, designated X or designated slot guy?
Well, I think that is important. I think that's probably what we had talked about earlier in the offseason about the conceptual learning, Luke, is knowing the entire play or knowing the entire route and the concept behind it. And, you know, are you going to be on the front side of the read? Are you on the backside? When we call different formations, where you are at based on, you know, which one of those receiver spots you're playing. And, you know, I just think it gives a lot of versatility to where we can line guys up and how we, you know, function as an offense and how we, you know, personnel things and who's in the game on certain packages.
Paul.
Hey, Mike.
he obviously worked a long time with one quarterback. What can you do to facilitate he and Ryan learning each other, and how much time goes into that? How do you deploy things maybe differently during camp than you would usually?
I think that that's the most important relationship if you're a receiver, is the one with the quarterback. You know, we talk all the time. You know, there's a play that gets installed, and you talk about man or zone, and you talk about spacing or running a route. But at the end of the day, if I'm a receiver, I'm going to be where the quarterback wants me to be when he needs me to be there. And so that's my message to them, is figure out, you know, quickly where the quarterback wants you to be and get there. And if you get the ball, take advantage of your opportunity. So I think to your question, the only way that they do that is by practicing, by meeting, by having conversations, you know, no different than what we would have, you know, any of our quarterbacks or wide receivers do, you know, when they're coming in here probably for the first time.
Teron.
Yeah, what's up, Coach? The conversation, kind of like with the onboarding process for Jones, how did that go as far as talking to him and making it clear, hey, you may not get 9 to 10 targets, but we'll get you involved, but it's a team offense and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, John, you know, touched on, you know, some of the onboarding process that you are referencing. And as always, conversations that I have with, you know, with our players are going to stay, you know, between me and them. And but we have expectations here. You know, we're going to treat every player the same way they treat the team. And that's no different than for Julio or for, you know, Racy McMath. It's just, you know, that's what we believe in. And, you know, we try to make our expectations here clear. We try to be, you know, direct with the players and try to get them to understand, you know, the way that we do things. And there hasn't been any sort of, you know, issue about, you know, really anything. And we'll, like anything else, we'll continue to make those expectations clear and how we do things and what time we're out on the field or how we practice and all those other things.
John Glennon.
Mike, I was going to ask you on Julio also, just kind of wondered what your impressions were of how he has, you know, come into a brand new team for the first time in over a decade, you know, how he's approached new teammates, new coaching staff, you know, OTAs, et cetera.
Yeah.
Just kind of how he's gone through this the first, you know, few days.
Yeah. You know, he came in after, you know, for I guess would be the physical, and had a conversation, you know, with me at length, had a conversation with Rob and Todd, and went through that first day of meetings, and, you know, needed to go to back to Atlanta to get some stuff. And then we asked that he communicate with us when his intentions were to come back. And he said, I want to come back Wednesday night. I want to be there and working on Thursday. And, you know, obviously be a part of the mini camp. So all the conversations that I've had have been, you know, positive and really good. And they've, you know, been open dialogue. So there's really appreciate that. You know, I know going to a new place, you know, sometimes is different, but that's what it's going to look like, you know, every year, that things are different and there's change throughout the NFL.
Terry.
Coach, when you bring in a guy who's accomplished as much as Julio has, is it still a long acclimation process, or is it made much quicker given what type of guy he is and how long he's been around?
You know, Terry, I'd hate to say one way or the other. It's going to take as long as it takes, you know, and, you know, we'll see where he's at as we work our way through the end of minicamp, and, you know, unquestionably excited about having him, but to say, you know, there's some sort of timetable on when he's going to know the entire offense and every detail that goes along with it, I hesitate to try to predict that.
Jared Stillman.
Hey, Mike, you played against offenses in your days, whether it was the Greatest Show on Turf or the Peyton Manning Colts teams that had multiple Hall of Famers on them in their primes. What was the key when you played against those and then when you played with them in New England with a great offense for that kind of offense with all of those great players to mesh well? What's the key for this group to mesh like those groups did?
I mean, I think it's, you know, it comes down to always putting the team first and being willing to do whatever's best for the football team. And we understand that there's a lot of people that right now we'd like to get the football to. They only give us one football. So, you know, I think that's what we're charged to do as coaches, to make sure that everybody fits into, you know, what we're doing and get them to buy in to how and what we believe in.
David Beauclair.
Mike, I'm sure you want to answer Julio questions all day, but Adam Kuhn, what's the challenge in the jump he's trying to make, and what have you seen that makes you think he's got a shot to do it?
Just wanted to try to take a look at Adam. You know, had followed his wrestling career for a while, and something that we looked at, and I was a part of as a player, taking a former wrestler, and they developed into an offensive lineman with Stephen Neal. You know, they have great, you know, wrestlers, especially at that elite level, have unbelievable balance, core strength. Things that, you know, I think would translate well to an offensive lineman. But having not played the game, there's a lot of development that has to go on, you know, pretty quickly for him to compete. But he's got a great attitude. He shows up. He competes. He goes hard. He just might not know what to do all the time. And, you know, I think we just have to continue to coach him and develop him and see, you know, what we can get out of him and how he develops.
Kayla. Hey, Coach, I know it's always cool when something like this happens. You get a big name, a pro like this, even just for us to see and watch. But how much can this just bring the energy of the team up? I mean, when you watch those guys out there, it's hard not to look at him and see what he does.
I think there's just excitement from everybody, Caleb. I think that, you know, you guys are unseasonably pleasant today as well. Sure, our fans are excited. Our organization is excited, but you know, we have to get to work. We got to put the work in, and that's what it comes down to in this business. It's not about what you've done; it's about what you're willing to do and what you will do. And I'm confident that Julio has begun that process.
Ben Arthur.
Hey, Mike, you know, you obviously, you know, talked about how, you know, your conversations with Julio are, you know, for private, but just kind of generally speaking, have you just gotten the sense that he's just kind of eager to maybe prove that, you know, he still has kind of a lot left in the tank? You know, a lot has been made of his age and just the injuries, the lingering injury he dealt with last year. Do you just feel like he's really just kind of driven, still has, you know, a pretty big fire just in terms of getting out there and showing people what he can do?
Well, I wouldn't want to speak for Julio or any of our players. So, you know, I think that would be a great question for him. I think that is something that I wouldn't want to comment on. I just think that whatever everybody's motivation is, hopefully winning is high on that priority list.
Buck.
Hey, Mike, I know the offseason with minicamp is not yet over, but what kind of growth have you seen that you've liked from the tight end position?
Well, I'm at, you know, you see him showing up more. I think, you know, Anthony has showed up in the red zone. You know, Furkus, you know, been a player that showed up in the red zone, that, you know, on third down, those really critical situation downs and areas of the football field, you know, and they continue to improve. And, you know, we're going to keep working and building with that group. Tommy Hudson has been here, and he was a young player that was with us on the practice squad. I would say that, Buck, that the biggest improvement, we're going to have to wait until, you know, training camp when we have, you know, pads on and we're running the football. But that's really where some of those guys are going to probably come to light and make the most progress. You know, is going to be in our run game, And then there's certainly there's routes and things that they do on first and second down. But, you know, Ferk right now is primarily, you know, that third down tight end and maybe that guy that we would look at in the red zone. But the other guys would be predominantly evaluated in training camp.
Diana Rossini. Coach, it's pretty evident here in the way you're talking about the Julio situation that no matter what, it's certainly not going to change the way you coach this team, which is team first, playmaking second. But maybe it's a little bit of a stretch here. Obviously, in your own career as a player, you went from one team spending over a decade in New England and then getting traded. So you kind of have something in common a little bit with Julio. Have you leaned on that at all, or have you shared with him, you know what that's like to just go to a completely new place and really know nothing?
Well, we've had some really good conversations. I wasn't nearly half the player that Julio Jones is. I was a throw-in with Matt Cassel. So I don't even think they knew I got traded. It's been really, you know, refreshing. I really feel a lot when I have conversations with Julio and, you know, Rashawn and Derek is how these guys were coached in college. And I can always really appreciate players that have come from places like Alabama, where there's so much consistency in how they do things. And listening to Nick Saban, Coach Saban talk about, you know, this is how we do things. And it doesn't change. The players may be different each year, but, you know, or the coaches come in, and we lose a lot of coaches, but you know, we're still going to do things the way that we do them. And we've had some great conversations, and we're excited about having Julio here.
Couple more for Coach. Emmanuel Morgan, New York Times.
Hey, Coach. It seems like the value for receivers is kind of like changing over the past two seasons. Julio and DeAndre Hopkins were second-round picks. From your perspective, why is that? And then from coaching perspective, how valuable is it to have a number one guy as a receiver?
Well, Emmanuel, I can't comment on the, you know, the analytics behind it or the compensation. You know, we made a deal. I think, you know, one thing I do know about deals is that, you know, everybody has to feel like they got something out of it. Atlanta got compensation. It's great to work with those people with Arthur and Terry, like John mentioned. And then we got a player that we're excited about. So as far as having a number one receiver, we really are looking for guys that get open, that catch the ball and are willing to try to block and finish longer than the guy with the football, whether they have it or somebody else does.
Jim Wyatt.
Mike, what do you like about what you've accomplished during OTAs and what's maybe important next week as you wrap up the offseason with the mini camp?
I think we've improved. I think our conditioning has improved. You know, Jim, what we feel like, you know, we play a certain style and stress the effort and finish on every play. And, you know, to do that, you have to be conditioned enough to play that way. And I think, you know, there's one thing about being able to run and go out there and do some 40s or some 50s or whatever they are, but your ability to go and play the football game and go play the game in the manner in which we expect it to be played takes a level of conditioning. And so I think that's improved. You know, we've gotten a lot of third down in, we're moving on, we've got some red zone in. So just excited to finish up next week and move on into the summer and get these guys back.
That's Mike Vrabel, head coach, Tennessee Titans. And you could hear that it wasn't just the local media asking questions today. Pretty big day. Julio Jones in a Titans uniform for the first time. And he is expected, or reportedly, to talk on the Zoom here shortly. So we will have that for you. Also, Elliot Friedman will join us, the best when it comes to NHL coverage. A lot going on around the league. We will pick his brain next. So keep it right here. Coverage of Julio Jones' first day, plus Elliot Friedman. We do it all here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.